At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Now, before convenient air travel, transatlantic travel was used, and never more so than in the glory days of the interwar years. It was an extraordinary undertaking made by many women, and our first guest today has written about some of them. Welcome to the show, Sian Evans.
Thank you very much, Selena. Lovely to be with you.
Lovely to have you on the show, Sian. Now, I'm guessing that these various women will have travelled all for different reasons.
They did indeed. Some of them were passengers, and because there were so many women traveling in both directions between the, sort of the North American continent and the South American continent and Western Europe, as I say, going backwards and forwards in both directions for various reasons, they needed to have women working on board to cater for their personal needs, or as stewardesses or nurses or nannies or chaperones or laundresses or swimming coaches. So I'm looking at the way in which women passengers and indeed women seafarers use the experience of going backwards and forwards on these great transatlantic ships between the wars.
Yeah. And we're talking luxury ocean liners, are we?
Well, we are, but it depended on how wealthy you were as to where you were in the social strata. So if you could imagine taking a slice down through one of these great big ships like the Aquitania, which was launched in 1914, the very upper decks would be full of staterooms and lovely cabins, all decorated in historic styles. You'd feel, if you were traveling up there, as though you were an Edwardian lady staying at a country house of some sort, maybe even a minor palace. Down below, literally several decks below, would be the second class, which would be full of clerics and perfectly respectable merchants and traders and dealers and all the rest of it. And they would be in slightly more Spartan surroundings, but still rather like a decent hotel. And then way on down below all of those, often near the waterline, would be third class. And that was where the people who were, if you like, in the cheap seats were travelling. They'd be packed in together in dormitory-style accommodation. On the newer ships, they might be lucky and have a small but packed cabin where there might be six of them in bunks or whatever. But they replaced the old-style steerage, which was an appalling way to cross the Atlantic, as you might imagine.
Presumably, it would have been very cheap to have got the cheap seats tickets.
It would indeed. It would be about between £5 and £10 per person to sail from one way from, let's say, Liverpool or Southampton in the third class or steerage to get as far as New York or Boston or Halifax, Nova Scotia. If you were planning to emigrate, you'd be able to scrape together enough money for yourself and your family to get over there. But it was a gamble because, if, let's say, you got to Ellis Island, which was the immigration centre for New York, if the people working there, the immigration officials, thought that you were going to be a drain on the society, or if you couldn't read or write, or if you had some communicable disease, you'd be sent back on the very same ship you arrived on, which was a disaster,
awful.
Of course.
Yeah, because it would have took a long time, a lot longer in those days, I would imagine, than it does now.
Oh, indeed. I mean, even on the fastest ship, it would take 5 or 6 days to travel. But quite often on the old tubs that were the cheaper means of travelling from, let's say, Glasgow or Liverpool to get you across to the States, it might be 8 or 10 days. And if the weather was bad, it could take even longer. You have to factor in the fact that the North Atlantic was a blooming horrible place to cross in the winter, which was why the cheap fares were even cheaper in November, December and January.
And you mentioned earlier about the stewards and the workers. Presumably they'd have had their own area, would they?
Yes, they did. Stewards and stewardesses, I mean, most of the crew, 95% of the crew on any one of these big ships would have been male. They only employed the 5% that were women because they had to cater for, observing the proprieties. In let's say, Victorian, early 20th century era, no nice lady wanted to be seen with a bucket, being seasick in her cabin by some lowly steward. She'd rather prefer to have the ministrations of somebody, as they put it, of her own gentler sex to look after her while she was feeling a bit ropey. And also you have to bear in mind, this is an era of rather formal dress.
Yes.
Women would travel with their own maids, and a decent maid on dry land in a well-lit bedroom might take 20 minutes to get the mistress into her corsets and her crinolines and her this and her that and her petticoats and her stays and all the rest of it. Imagine trying to do that in an ill-lit cabin while there's a storm at sea going on. The maids themselves might be prostrate with seasickness. And what you needed there was a competent stewardess with her feet standing at what they call the 5-2 position. Uh-huh. If you look at any of those photographs of these often older women working on the ships, they've got very sensible footwear and they're standing with their feet stuck out at a strange angle.
Look out for that.
Stop them falling over.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, doesn't it? There's some logic there. Well, you've taken some well-known names. I've just picked out a few of them that are included in your book and that would have travelled this way. For example, Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, Marlene Dietrich. Well, she was an absolute legend. I mean, she was so beautiful and such a star. She'd been a star of the German cinema. And, of course, in the 1930s, you get a lot of women, for various reasons, leaving Europe and heading to America. One of her co-stars, if you like, Hedy Lamarr, was one of the people for whom the situation in Germany and Austria was getting too hot. And these women, they set out to make a new career for themselves, traveling across the ocean, basically getting to Hollywood, where they knew they would be much in demand. But it was a gamble for them because they were leaving behind, even if they were established like Marlene Dietrich, they were leaving behind what they knew and taking a bit of a leap in the dark. In later years, Marlene Dietrich was a fantastic transatlantic traveler. There are wonderful photographs of her in the most wonderful, gorgeous designer wear. And she was very much a player. She knew that she had to play along with her public image, and she saw posing for photographs on board these great ships as part of her public persona. So she would stand there, looking absolutely gorgeous and glamorous on the deck of the ships while the Cunard photographers, the in-house photographers, took photographs of her, but also the press photographers. She always followed the advice of her dear friend Noel Coward, who would say, always be seen, darling, always be seen.
And I hope she had her feet at 5-2 while she was having the photographs taken.
I think she probably did. You wouldn't want to totter around the deck of the Queen Mary, which was particularly known for its rolling motion, actually, a fact that Cunard tended to keep under wraps. You wouldn't want to totter around there in stilettos or high heels.
And who was Josephine Baker?
Josephine Baker was the most amazing character. She was born, she's an African-American dancer and singer who was amazingly talented. She was born in St. Louis in Missouri in 1906 at a time of extreme racial prejudice, really. And she was sent out to work at the age of 8 as a maid, a housemaid, where she was very badly treated. She got married in her teens, very young teens. She managed to escape both the marriage and St. Louis and headed for New York, where she danced for nickels and dimes, entirely self-taught, to theatre queues, queuing outside theatres. She was talent spotted there, and she was scooped up and added to a troupe of black jazz musicians and dancers who were being sent to Paris to do a new show called La Revue Nègre, which was opening in Paris in the mid-1920s. And she stole the show. Her dancing ability was jaw-dropping. Her singing wasn't brilliant, but it was very sweet. And she's a great actress. Paris took her to its heart. There was far less racial prejudice there than there was in America. And she became a sort of cause célèbre in America. Picasso adored her. Ernest Hemingway fancied the socks off her. She became very wealthy, and she spent most of the rest of her working life in France. She joined the, she supported the French resistance during the Second World War, and after the Second World War, she fought for human rights on an international stage. But France became her adopted home, and again, it was a leap in the dark. She was a kid from nowhere, and she just got on this ship, third class, traveling with a bunch of people, hoping that getting to the other side of the Atlantic and establishing herself might make her a new life, and it did.
Was it the same Josephine Baker that Al Stewart wrote a song about?
Probably, I don't know.
I'm sure it is. It was about an American-born French entertainer. I'm thinking it probably was, actually. Yeah, I'll check.
Bound to be her. I don't know the record, but it's quite likely.
And who was Violet the Unsinkable Jessop?
Violet the Unsinkable Jessop. She was wonderful. She was Irish, or rather, I should say, she was of Irish parentage, but she was born in Argentina. Her parents were a couple of expats who'd gone to Argentina to start, of all things, a sheep farm, and that didn't pan out too well. She was the eldest of, I think, six children, and her father died when she was still quite young. So her mother, who was absolutely bereft and bereaved, brought the entire family back on a ship from South America to England, and when they got there, her mother desperately needed some means of supporting the family, and it was quite a respectable job in the late 19th century to be a stewardess, and so she went to sea working as a stewardess on the transatlantic routes. But the mother fell ill, and Violet took her place instead. So Violet, naive and unworldly and very pretty, went to sea at the age of 21, doing the South American route, and then switched to the White Star Lines, just in time to join the Olympic, which was a massive, great ocean-going transatlantic ship run by White Star. It was a sister ship of the Titanic. So 1911... Violet is on the, working as a stewardess on the Olympic, when it crashes into another ship. There's a collision just off the Isle of Wight. Fortunately, nobody is terribly badly hurt, but she survives. But then a year later, because Violet is very pretty and rather good at her job, she's invited to join the maiden voyage of the Olympic sister ship, the Titanic.
Wow.
So she sails from Liverpool on the Titanic, and I think it's 4 or 5 days out. Violet is asleep in her bunk at 11 o'clock in the evening, when all of a sudden there's this almighty noise, and she hears the iceberg ripping along the side of the ship, and she and her fellow stewardess leg it upstairs and throw on their life jackets and some clothes and go to their muster stations to alert their female travellers and their children, passengers and so on. And Violet is saved, because there's a lot of confusion on board the Titanic, because nobody actually wants to take to the lifeboats, and there's a lot of language problems. One of the crew gets Violet to get into one of the lifeboats and sit there to show how it's done, to encourage the others, the people who don't speak English, and he hands her a baby. She doesn't know whose baby it is, and the ship fills, the little lifeboat fills up and is launched successfully, and off they set. They row away from the Titanic, just in case the ship does go down, and of course, over the next few hours, they witness the awful horror of the ship gradually listing and then sinking below the waves, with hundreds of people killed, and they're sitting there on an icy sea, starlit for the night, just listening to the sounds of people dying. It's awful. The next morning, they're rescued by a ship called the Carpathia, which picks its way between the ice floes very carefully. They come to the lifeboat in which Violet is sitting there, hunched and frozen. They manage to get down what's known as a bosun's chair. It's like a chair on a long rope, if you can imagine it, with a safety harness. Mm. And they get her into that, and she's still holding the baby. And they winch her up onto the deck, and she's so cold, they have to gently unprise her arms to get the baby out of her care. And as they do this, some woman appears from elsewhere on the Carpathia. She's also been rescued, snatches the baby out of her arms and says, "My baby," and runs off with it. It is indeed her baby, as it turns out. Violet has saved some complete stranger's baby. Violet survived the sinking of the Titanic, and then in 1916, she's working on the Britannic, which is a British hospital ship, the sister of the previous two, the Olympic and the Titanic, and you can see a pattern here. And it hits a mine in the Aegean, and they all have to evacuate. But the ship is still moving, and it's listing at the front. And as the ship is moving forward, and the lifeboats are are gently drifting backwards. The lifeboats are driven into or pulled into the wake of the ship, and the propellers are coming out of the water and churning in the air. Mm. And a number of people are killed, and Violet is badly injured because the lifeboats drift into the path of these giant steel propellers. Mm. Nevertheless, despite suffering concussion and a terrible head wound and I think a broken leg, Violet recovers and returns to sea.
Oh, my goodness.
She spends, I know, 43 years as a stewardess.
Wow. What an amazing story.
That's why she was known as the unsinkable stewardess.
Yes. I think after the first one, I wouldn't go back to sea again. Never mind do it three times.
Me neither.
Oh, amazing. There's some amazing stories, and there's so much more in the book, which is called Maiden Voyages, Women and the Golden Age of Transatlantic Travel. It's by Sean Evans, who we're speaking to now, and we're selling it right now on our website, tre.radio. Sean, it's been lovely talking to you and hearing all the stories. I've got a copy of the book here, so I might just sneak it home with me and take a read myself. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Selena. It's great fun.
Take care. Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.